You're listening to Dolphinville Radio. This is your host, Dolphinus. Welcome aboard.
Now move your awareness to the heart area, the center of the chest, and see a beautiful flower which represents the heart. It may be a rose or a lotus, whose colorful petals are exquisite and inviting. Imagine yourself very small and able to drop with ease into the center of the flower. As you do so, feel yourself being enveloped by the soft, sensual petals, absorbing the various colors and shades, and seduced by the attractive aroma of the flower. This is what it feels like to be held by the embrace of your own heart, to be supported by its strength and compassion.
Okay, this is Douglas Dolphinus, Dolphinville Radio. We're sitting again in Kona, Hawaii, the center of the universe when it comes to dolphins, people, whales together. Our guest today is Dr. Christine Page, who is an internationally known author and lecturer. She conducts workshops on the nature of consciousness and how it's affecting people within the holographic universe. Her works have been on the market for a good 10 or 15 years. Her latest book, Spiritual Alchemy, is something we'll talk about a little bit during the show. But welcome, Christine, to
Thank
the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I'm glad to that you are here enjoying the dolphins and whales. We're here as actually part of a conference or a seminar that Joan Ocean is holding that introduces people to the whales, but you're already familiar with the dolphins and whales.
I have. I've been coming to this beautiful place for 10, 12 years now.
Yeah, well, what stimulated that?
When you asked about when did I first meet the dolphins, I think it was way back when, as a kid, we would go across to the Scottish Islands, and we spent a lot of time, and of course, we called them porpoises, and they probably were, but the dolphins and porpoises used to run with the ferries every time we crossed across, and they're just the joyfulness that they bring and the sense of excitement they get by riding the waves or riding the bow. And then it wasn't, I think I saw my first whale off the coast of California and was so excited. I was on my own and you felt the whole world, you should attract everybody to come and see that, just the beauty and the dignity of them being there. And then since then I've lived on the Californian coast and watched both the whales and the dolphins, and I've seen them off the Carolina coast. And I started coming with Joan probably about 10 years ago. I met Joan, in fact, in London, and then she was having a seminar, a healing seminar with sound, and a lot of the wonderful sound people came in.
The power of
sound came in, and not only did we get this sounding, we were able to go out with the dolphins and use the sounding, and to swim with the dolphins, and they taught me so much. I think the dolphins are both wonderful examples of joyfulness and being very present in the moment, as well as being able to be great teachers. I think we all get our own messages, of course. Mine was, don't be so serious. And what you want, stop willing it and let it happen. When I started to bring groups here, which I did, people got so excited. Is that you all only have to mention that you're going to swim with the dolphins, and you 30 people sign up. They want to be with you.
Well, I wish it was that easy. I think there's a little bit more to it than that, because a number of people says, "Oh yeah, I want to do this," but it's not quite. You have to have a certain magnetism, which you obviously do. You have a joy and a happiness that surrounds you. And of course, your beaming happy face makes it comfortable to deal with some areas that often aren't that easy to deal with, somewhat uncomfortable even, for people to look inside of themselves. You started, is it actually a medical background? And so you went through the traditional science window and expanded out into homeopathic practice, and then finally into alchemical kinds of concerns. How did that progress, and what were the sort of milestones that led you in that direction?
You know, I always have to turn the journey upside down, because I started, first of all, for myself, I never lost my connection to the other world, so I always had a spirit connection, always had my guides around me. Fortunately, chose a mother who also understood all that and was interested in the psychic world. So as a kid, I was surrounded by new ideas, ETs, I mean, fortunately, my mother was a Gemini. She loved learning. So it didn't matter what it was. She brought them into our house. We looked at it, we discussed it, we had it open, and my father said, well, whatever your mother thinks is probably right. So it was very open as a family,
mm-hmm.
and that encouraged me to explore different ways, to be an inquirer, and to not put things aside. So in many ways, the strange story is, how did I get into medicine, you know, because it was almost at that point of almost coming into much more of a narrow way of thinking rather than that expansive way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did know that I wanted to be around people, and there was something I have and I still have, is a fascination of what brings people to true health. And that's been my journey, is what really brings health to people, and the word health meaning wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
What makes people whole? And it's my journey. I mean, it's my own journey of how do I become whole. And therefore, through my various, I've worked in surgery, I've worked in obstetrics, I've worked pediatrics, ER, then went on into homeopathy because I said, my patients aren't getting better. 80% of them would just keep taking the tablets. You know,
mm-hmm.
we can't help you further.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there's got to be something more.
Mm-hmm.
So as I went into homeopathy and other forms of complementary medicine, I was getting people off their drugs. To me, this is what I went into medicine for.
Wow.
And then I said, well, hang on, people are still dependent on us. They need to come to me.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing was, how do we teach people to listen to their own bodies?
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I've been training doctors and psychologists and others to help their clients to listen to their intuition. And of course, in the meantime, to better help them listen to their intuition.
Yeah. Well, it's all we need it in the world, as you say. The medical industry seems to be pill pushers,
right.
That are, you know, following the dictates of the larger drug companies,
yes.
who want to keep people on this treadmill of,
yes.
the next better and bigger medical breakthrough. It is self-empowerment.
Yes.
That's the real road to healing. And I think it's terrific that you were able to go through the discipline that it takes to become a medical doctor.
Right.
And then the people then who are following you know that you're not just making this all up.
Right.
And that science background, I think, gives them a little bit more confidence. It's interesting how science now seems to be the forum that is allowing us to connect up to the metaphysical.
Right.
Whereas the so-called New Age people have gotten a little bit off to the side, a little bit too airy-fairy, ungrounded, so shall we say. Science now has brought it back with quantum physics. And
mm-hmm.
One of the catchphrases that you use is the holographic universe,
right.
which was a very influential title of a book,
yes.
that I read about 12 years ago,
exactly.
by Michael Talbot.
Yes.
And he was using the example of quantum physics as a way to explain some of the natural phenomena, psychic phenomena.
Yes.
Do you find that that's, you're using it in the same way to as an example?
I am, and I should have to say, I found Michael's book here probably 12 years ago,
yes.
in the bookshop here, which
uh-huh.
is no longer here, but, you know, one of those books that fell off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
I've just heard of holograms, and here's this book, just tears, you go,
mm-hmm.
yes, this is right.
Yeah.
I have always been interested in energy medicine.
Mm.
Yes, I can work with healers, healing, and I work with the chakras a lot of the time, and have done for 15, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and have worked alongside of Kirlian photography and how that's expanded.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Michael's book, of course, goes a lot into what is there when the physical body is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And that side of energy medicine, I think, is fascinating, and it still needs more done on it. I have friends who have worked with and have cameras that can actually record not just an aura as in a still picture, but the active aura.
Wow.
And to me, this is the place we're at,
mm-hmm.
is being able to do that alongside an MRI or
mm-hmm.
others. So
yeah.
we can start to look at how does our energy flow.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I then took it to the next stage of saying, well, what contributes to that energy, which we call the etheric body, around the body,
right.
and then you start working in the world of the astral body, the emotional body, the
mm-hmm.
mental body, the soul body.
Mm-hmm.
And that became fascinating to me, is like, so how do we work with all of that without trying to fix it? Because so much, again, of my world is, well, that must be wrong, I have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Where I see at least 60% of illness as a wake-up call from the soul.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that if we're saying that that's a wake-up call, we mustn't say that someone's made a mistake. It's like saying, yes, I chose this life, but I made a mistake when I had this illness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If I chose this life, I also chose the illness.
Yes, yes.
And that gets me sometimes in deep water, but not too deep water.
Well, I imagine most of the doctors, they don't like that. I imagine it was an uphill battle with a lot of the medical profession when you started talking this way.
Well, you know, the word that always comes is, so you're telling me I should be blamed for my illness.
Uh-huh.
And I go, I don't think I ever use that word.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using a word that says, I would say, I'm going to make you less helpless to your illness.
Uh-huh. Well,
so, you know, so what opportunities are coming because of this? What's changing?
Mm-hmm.
What is it you would do differently?
Yeah.
And I have never had problems with patients taking that on board.
Mm-hmm.
I've only found professionals have difficulty.
Yeah. Well, there's an issue of control
yes.
that particularly is associated with people of a scientific mind. And I think the whole scientific doctrines are based on the idea that they can put things in a box and it'll operate under predictable conditions and
okay.
repeatable patterns, and therefore it's accurate and factual, and we'll believe in that.
Yes.
If it's outside of that box, then we don't want anything to do with it. It becomes an obscure fact that is tucked in the back of the closet.
Absolutely.
But now we're all interested in what's going on in the back of the closet.
Exactly.
What to believe.
Exactly. Well, what a great film.
Yeah.
And it's just brought everything to the fore and started to connect the dots, which have been there, as you say, for many of us.
Mm-hmm.
People like Candice Pert has
mm-hmm.
done wonderful groundbreaking work mm-hmm. there with the neurotransmitters.
Yeah.
The link that we've all been talking about between our emotions and our physical body.
Right. Now we have PhDs who are saying, this is the way it works.
Yes.
So we can believe that the mystics, what they were telling us from the intuitive base, were actually true.
Exactly.
Well, the mystics have led us all into these new areas, and a lot of the so-called buzzwords, like the holographic image, a holographic universe, comes to mind. The dolphins seem to introduce me or help me to understand on some level, and this is a total nonverbal understanding of the holographic phenomenon, or holographic paradigm. And it was through their grace and what you mentioned before about being able to let go of the sense that you need to know or need to have control over your situation
mm-hmm.
and allow the universe to participate, and so that you might co-create rather
mm-hmm.
than trying to make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were really instrumental, I think, in my life. But another buzzword that we've heard, and there's a man over in Honolulu, Curiel, who talks about the great shift.
Right.
And something that you use in your literature and in your lectures, how do you describe or define the great shift?
Well, I took it out of probably the Mayans, and many of us know the coming of the end of their huge calendar, which of course is not the end of the world, but it's just the end of the calendar as they saw it. And they say this is the end of the fifth world, as they describe it, and moving into that next world. And I think that how I've seen it is like a giant tsunami. And I mean, when I wrote that word, of course, most people had no clue, except here on the Big Island, what the tsunami meant.
Yeah, sure.
And what I was showing is that many waves of consciousness were coming to a completion
mm-hmm.
at around this time.
Hmm.
Some of them 26,000 years old, some
mm-hmm.
of them 2,000 as we know in the
yeah.
Aquarian age coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Some even saying a 52,000-year-old cycle
yes.
coming through.
Precession of the equinox.
Exactly. So, you know, so many of these different cycles coming to an end, and it seemed to be what the peak was, that they were all coming to the end at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like biorhythms just
yeah.
adding up and on each other. And that great shift was like a great tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've been reading and writing and speaking about is about, are you able to ride the wave?
Right.
I mean, this has become more appropriate now.
Or get to high ground.
Or get to high ground. What are you anchored to? You
yes.
know, what is anchoring you, and is what's anchoring you helpful to you?
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't about flying high above it.
Right.
It's about, how do I find my balance on this earth, staying mm-hmm. centered, and yet not be so anchored to the materialistic, or let's say the more attached part of my nature.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I attached to
mm-hmm.
that would mean that I would drown in this?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The tsunami, as long as we're on the topic, I'd be curious to know what your take on that phenomenon was.
My immediate, obviously I have great sympathy and compassion for all those that lost lives, and especially the children. I mean, the fact is their children went. many would say that those children were moving on to that next world. They didn't need to be at this stage. I really feel that the children around truly don't have to go through this transition. Mm-hmm. And I think that so many children being lost was allowed us to become more compassionate. Mm-hmm. What I saw within days was the huge outpouring across the world, more so than anything we'd seen before. Mm-hmm. And it meant that everybody was involved. I mean, 9-10 nations were involved actually in the losses, but many more were involved in having citizens were out there. Mm-hmm. And I feel that it was the first global alert we'd ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something where nobody was really about who had done it. It was a global alert. Everybody was in their hearts,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and their sympathy for, wow, what would that have been like for me, mm-hmm. to have lost my son or daughter or husband? And in the immediacy of it as well, it made everybody realize that today is the day you need to tell someone you love them.
That's right, that's right.
Today is the day that you need to make sure that mm-hmm. you're not doing something you don't want to do.
Sure.
Tomorrow, or yeah. within seconds, it can be taken.
The old wisdom that you live each day as if it's your last, each moment as if it's your breath is your last breath, and then suddenly your focus is a little bit more concentrated on doing a complete potential thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And you feel that this great shift, this tsunami then, is having a cumulative effect. Like you've watched and noticed a difference, let's say 10 years ago when you started coming to Hawaii with your groups, there was a certain, let's say, an average type of participant.
Right.
Has that shifted as well that you've been noticing?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. I mean, it's hard for me. I've lived over in the States now for 4 years, and I've been teaching there. I now get 25% doctors coming to my courses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have primarily been working with healthcare professionals, but 25% are MDs.
Wow.
The rest are psychologists or psychotherapists, mm-hmm. nurses. But what I'm excited by is the interest from the science communities mm-hmm. in this work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about intuition, so it's even more way out. And you're asking them to do often something that nobody around them would truly understand.
Mm-hmm.
There are still pockets, obviously, in the States, around the world, who see this work as very witch-like, very shaky.
Yeah.
But I see so many people stepping up and having courage
mm-hmm.
to, wherever they are, to bring themselves forward. It doesn't mean doing New Age work, but live their truth, which is all I believe in, Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
Is I don't care what they do, but live your truth. This is the time of the great shift, is saying, step into your truth.
Right.
Remember who you are.
Yeah, and have the courage to be in that integrity. It's helpful when you have other people who are living that way.
Absolutely.
You can see that it can be done and that you're not going to be squashed by the tyrannical powers that be.
Yes.
And how do these people then, when you take, let's say, a first-time MD in one of your classes and you start to talk about holographic universes and the tsunami of great shifts, do you see their eyes glaze over, or is there a real kind of opening in their mind?
A real opening.
Mm-hmm.
I think even 4 years ago I saw a few that were going, "Whoa, no way, this woman from Britain is a little odd."
Mm-hmm.
But now I don't get that. I get people who say, "I can't quite follow you, but I want to."
Right.
But many times I said, I bet most of you wouldn't be here a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the hands that go up, they say, "I wouldn't."
Yeah.
And I go and teach in the communities I'm usually working in, so I get an audience from just the community,
mm-hmm.
and you men and women now coming along to work with their intuition, which is a challenge in its own right.
Sure.
And to work with their bodies and listen to their bodies and talk to their bodies. This is remarkable work now that people are now looking for their own answers in a way they've never done before.
Mm-hmm.
And the children are helping them, because the grandchildren, these young indigos or crystal children, are really saying, "Well, what's this child about?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're the teachers now.
Well, they talked about the phenomenon of the young ones coming in. And I've seen evidence. But it seemed to me on some level, now maybe because of the way my nature of my own childhood, but that every child is born with this huge potentiality.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened is that the system that they're born into has a tendency to restrict them down and make them bend to the rules, the school, mm-hmm. the society, the parents, and what was once a potential crystal or indigo child suddenly becomes a more normal child who's been made and forced to forget what they know inherently.
Yeah.
But that's changing. I think the liberalization of education is starting to move that, and people opening up. I'm excited about that. How do you feel that we can keep this hologram alive as we're developing it in our culture?
I think that if I may just try and describe how I see it,
yes,
and that
please.
Might just, because even though the concept of the hologram is that we're a small part of the whole, the microcosm in the macrocosm, to me there's more depth to it, and it has such a strong influence to the creation of our reality.
Hmm.
In many ways, what I believe is that the hologram is completely present now,
mm-hmm.
and it's what the whales maintain
mm-hmm.
through working with their grid, the grid system.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't see parts of the hologram unless we reach a certain level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is the meaning of, it isn't that you create your own reality, you create your perception of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so the key for me is that if I change my perception, I actually see parts of the hologram that were always there, but I couldn't see them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think we have this issue with the dolphins, where you can be willing them to be there,
yes.
because you want them to be there,
right, right.
then when you let go of willing them, they're absolutely present with you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to me, the dolphin is such a representative of the ability to move between the dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
But they are teaching us that one level of way of living in reality isn't through the will.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lived through the will so much that truly to get to the next level of the hologram is to come from, it is to come from the heart, but it's to come from the merging with what is rather than trying to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. One of the perceptions of the holographic imagery to me was that each person is like a piece of the giant hologram.
Right.
As we know, the analogy is that every little piece of the hologram joins together, and each piece has a contains the whole picture.
Right, right.
But as you join the pieces together, the overall picture becomes clearer.
Right.
So the phenomenon that I've witnessed so often in these seminars is that as people come together with their separate pieces and they begin to enliven and empower those pieces and then recognize how they join together, then a whole other picture emerges, which is the group consciousness.
Right.
The group mind or pod mind that we like to refer to with the cetaceans is something that is very, very possible for humans to attain.
Right.
And I think that's part of what they're asking us to tune into.
Yes.
Start to learn what it feels like to be in that group mind space.
I think in what you're saying, I absolutely agree. And I see it as each of us being this flower with the many petals.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you say, each time we open another petal of our
mm-hmm.
flower,
right.
we become more clear.
Yes.
And that's our light shining.
Mm-hmm.
But in a group setting, the beauty is you see your unfolded petals, the parts of you that are still your mirrors.
Yes.
And what a group does is also allow us to have compassion for the part of us that we are
precisely.
Not wanting to meet.
Yeah. Well, the opening door for our heart is love. And when we start to look and experience ourselves and others, that's the physical demonstration of that
yes.
principle.
And that's the hardest thing, but that's what I do a lot of, is it's not looking necessarily at the bits you like. I mean, the people you get on with, you get on with.
Yes.
It's the ones you go, oh,
yes.
wish that person would, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the mirror. I
right.
say if you have an emotional reaction to someone, mm-hmm. there's something there for you to learn.
Yeah, so often, what I used to say, if you have a charge on it, that's
there we go.
The universe saying, take a look
exactly.
at that. That's an alarm button going
exactly.
off, that this is something about yourself that you're uncomfortable
yeah.
with, and therefore you're finding fault in others.
Exactly.
Because that's your own reflection. That is, again, the benefit of being in a group situation, particularly one like Joan supports it, and I imagine that you have the same
yeah.
kind of thing because of the group that I saw you with last week. There is such joy and happiness.
Yes.
It's big kids camp.
Yes.
Everybody is out there and letting go of the constraints of adulthood and getting back to where we were when we were in a state of wonderment.
Yes.
And the world
exactly.
could be anything that we wanted as a 7 or 8 year old.
Yes.
And we were friends with everybody. There was no color distinction. There was no separation.
Yes.
We were all on the playing field.
Yes.
And sure, there were some of the kids who were stinky and some of the kids who were bullies and some of the kids who we really liked.
Yes.
But by and large, there was more of an acceptance on that playground.
And I think sometimes we get more annoyed with the person who's out enjoying themselves.
Yes.
You know, if you're misresponsible, it's like, what are they doing, being enjoying?
Yes.
And I mean, the dolphins go, just get over it, you know?
No, it's true. Don't take yourself so seriously.
Seriously. And often the person we get annoyed with is doing something we'd love to do, but we just haven't got the courage to do it. So, you know, we can often find ourselves criticizing them when really we just want to let go, as
mm-hmm.
you say,
mm-hmm.
and be that child who's been suppressed.
Well, another way of looking at what you're pointing out is that so often when I tell people I live in Hawaii,
right.
the first reaction is, oh, Hawaii. And then I get this, like, ooh, You live in Hawaii? You rat, you're not supposed to do that. You know, what allows you to feel to be in that position and I can't, you know?
Exactly.
So anyway, guilt trip on me. You can't be happy. It's not fun. I want to be the one that's being happy. Well, what can we do to, say, continue to expand and keep this holographic mentality? How come I know what you're doing, I know what I'm doing, but let's say the common person at work, or they've got a 9-to-5 job, how would you recommend that they start to bring that into their everyday life?
So what I would see is happening is it's a choice, it's all choice, everything's about choice, and I've heard that so much through my inner teachers, of it's just choice. My girlfriend often describes it like having a closet full of clothes, mm-hmm. and you can just choose which clothes you put in. So one of the things I'm saying is become authentic. So much I see is people wearing facades and labels that don't fit them anymore. And it doesn't mean that that isn't a good label. If they want to become that nice person again, they are that nice person. But maybe tomorrow they should go out and be the bitch. Mm-hmm. You know? So part of it is becoming, as we're talking about, the more rounded, the more mm-hmm. petals that are open, mm-hmm. the more your light can shine.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a choice. But I feel that many people are unhappy with the way they are, and they do get irritated, but they suppress that irritation behind a good person doesn't get irritated. And I'm saying is, maybe what would you be like if you were authentic?
Right.
And that becomes then, I see it so much, of course, because of working with life-threatening conditions,
sure.
where people say, well, I've only got 2 months to live, well, I'm really going to live the way I wanted to live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give up that job, I'm going to get rid of that person, I'm going to tell that one what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it is almost like, what would you do if you were authentic? What would you do if you only had 2 months?
Yeah.
You know, who would you actually be honest with, or how would you live it?
Yeah.
And in, you know, our society, there is so much pressure on people to be nice and good and to follow certain rules that creates more illness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I'm saying that part of it. What I see in the hologram is that it's held, there are, just as we have the different bodies, so does the earth have these different bodies, and those different bodies I see as different parts of the hologram.
Mm.
And the one which is really being stimulated at this moment is the one to do with the astral body, which is held together through fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear is the largest emotion, as we all know, that will just stop us moving into these other levels,
mm-hmm.
even to levels of love. And what I see is, obviously, the more energy I give to my fears, the more I enhance that part of the hologram.
Mm-hmm.
I see outside that our belief systems, mm-hmm. which, of course, again, are well-maintained. And then I see the holographic energy that we're working towards is the one that we call the soul grid,
mm-hmm.
or the Christ Conscious Grid, or the dodecahedron.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just purely choice.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, at the moment, those of us who have a little bit more consciousness need to ask ourselves, how much energy do we want to give to the fear grid?
Yes, yes.
And of course it is hard. We watch media, we watch underneath the terror alerts. But every time we see it, to understand that there are those who would rather maintain that part of the grid for their own purposes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There are those who would rather maintain the mentality grid, the one that has, these are the dogmas by which you live.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I would be saying those who wish to listen to their inner voice, it's what does it mean to be in your soul? What does
mm-hmm.
it mean to follow your inner voices rather than through fear or through dogma?
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've spoken about this in terms of, this isn't new work, but the intensity, what I'm watching is
mm-hmm.
that literally the hologram is starting to shimmer and break apart
mm-hmm.
where it's been maintained through fear.
Uh-huh.
And what happens then is that those who would rather we gave our power away to them, to that fear,
mm-hmm.
are increasing the ante. They're putting more energy into holding on to that.
Yeah.
Because truly, if we move towards that soul grid, which
mm-hmm.
is what I believe that whales are truly holding so strongly for us,
mm-hmm.
We do not need anybody in the middle of us. We don't need anybody to tell us how to do anything.
That's right.
We have that soul connection. And we know this, and the children, again, these young children are coming in, they don't need parenting.
Mm-hmm,
they
mm-hmm.
they tell their teachers they don't need them
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
they have their connection.
Yes, yes. Well, there's a lot being said about that. Kids who are supposedly being identified as the new children, the psychic children, have some challenges relative to what we call the HDD.
Yes.
They have all these kinds of conditions that make it difficult for them to maintain focus, and we haven't really adapted a system by which we can allow them to grow and expand into themselves. There are a couple educational systems out there that seem to allow that, but so few people are aware of that. More instances of homeschooling seem to be the result. I do see evidence of what you're describing as a breakdown of the fear matrix, is what I term it.
Yes.
It's been in place, and very solidly in place, and with this new transitional time that we're in now, the so-called baby boomers who are all reaching our state of looking at our mortality and making a reevaluation of what life's purpose is and what we want to leave as a legacy to those children who are coming up from behind us.
Yes.
The ancient indigenous people would always look at 11 generations ahead as a way of saying, well, what are we doing now? How is it going to affect the next 11 generations?
Right.
Most of our contemporary society does not abide by that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something that's coming back together, a primal urgency that is joining with the grids, as you call it, that the whales and the dolphins are holding, because they're a planetary consciousness. They're the old souls. They're the original inhabitants here on the planet who are holding this grid line in place for us. This is a critical time. These are interesting times.
They are.
To paraphrase the Chinese proverb. But it's kind of exciting to see, and I can understand how much pressure is being brought to bear on people who want desperately to hold on to the old paradigm.
Yes.
So that's causing their own mental and physical ailments and coming through big time.
And it's not, you know, one of the ways in which we give away power is, and therefore maintain perhaps a fear grid, or we don't have that light opening, is by giving our power away in terms of allowing people to steal it from us. And energy vampiring is so big.
Yeah.
You know, through shaming people, through creating fear. And most of us have had it in our childhood, or if not in our adult life.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very easy to find someone taking your power.
It's and yet, addictive, isn't
it? It is. And, you know, the ability to cut, you know, to close those lower three chakras and just say, you're not having any energy from me, and that might mean the end of a relationship. It's big work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, many people prefer that someone takes their energy.
Yeah.
But this is not going to help anybody nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was an old comic line that said, shine a light and they'll follow it anywhere.
Right.
In terms of religion, a lot of people want somebody to take responsibility for them.
Right.
Therefore, it's the priest, or it's the reverend, or it's the holy man, the guru. And I think we're seeing, again, a kind of a cultural rebellion against the idea of a guru or a spiritual leader that we have to follow. It's being put back on us. And more people in their authenticity are starting to stand up and take responsibility for their own thoughts and actions.
Exactly. And for my part as a woman, the Native Americans say 1,000 years of peace will come from women healing their hearts.
Yeah, I really believe that.
For us women, it's about letting men be nurtured by us from a mother, son, and saying, no, I can't carry you anymore. I have to, you know, let you find your own way, and if that involves you feeling that I don't love you, that's just got to be the way it is.
That takes a lot of courage to do that,
it
too.
Does.
Sort of breaking the old patterns, or demystifying, or actually reinventing the myths of particularly the archetypal male-female roles.
Yes.
There's been a lot of literature about this shifting of the male and female, not only the biological essences, but also the social structures that are surrounding those things.
Yes.
Have you encountered a lot of challenges with, you know, say, some of your participants who are facing these dilemmas with the role of male females in our society?
Truly, and I think it's, whatever we may say, oh, we've got male and female within us all, etc. It is truly still my gender is female, and it is for my gender and your gender as a male to find out what is it to be a woman, what is it to be a man, even though we know we've got both. And for my part as a woman is to help other women step up, not against men, because that's not what we're talking about, but to step up so that they can hold the space for men just as men hold the space for women in a healthy way, not in a dependent way.
Well, that brings us to partnership in the 21st century.
Right.
What does it look like? It's been described by Renee Eisler, who wrote a beautiful treatise of The Chalice and the Blade some 20 years ago. talked about a partnership society as the future of our culture.
Right.
And that made sense to me.
Right.
How do you feel in a new partnership?
Yes.
You're recently married.
Yes.
You know, this is probably not the first time around for you or for either of you, but it must be different than all the other times.
I think
how is
so.
This partnership different than other partnerships, and how do you see it developing?
I think we stepped up in a very big way, which where we said right up front, I said, I want to be respected, and I want to be honoured, and I want to be supported.
Mm-hmm.
Supported was not necessarily financial.
Yeah.
It was my first two, I want to be respected and honoured.
Mm-hmm.
And that I could only say when I had had a period of time on my own where I learned to respect and honour myself.
Mm-hmm.
And what that felt like, what that meant, so that it wasn't about trying to find a partner who would do that for me because I didn't know how to do it for myself. It was that I had a sense of, actually, I know who I am, and I'm not going to be shamed. Because that to me is the opposite of respect, is
mm-hmm.
the shaming
mm-hmm.
of myself. So I'm not going to allow anything that shames me or that doesn't honour me as an individual or what I believe. It doesn't mean that anybody has to agree with me. It's just honouring me,
mm-hmm.
and not putting me down.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to my wonderful husband, of course, he agreed to that. And we put that into our oaths.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we hold each other to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we hold each other to... We say, I will hold you to becoming all that you are.
Mm.
And I'll hold you. And we both have said that if that means that for any reason we wouldn't be together,
mm-hmm.
if holding him to himself meant that on some level I needed mm-hmm. to let him go, that would have to be there.
Mm.
Because it was, I was never wanting to hold anybody, nor was he, to something that was not going to honour and respect them in their journey.
Mm. Well, I hope people listening will understand the depth and wisdom of those statements. So often when we were growing up, I know that a codependent relationship is what we so often associated with a marriage.
Right.
It was like, I can do for you what you can't do for yourself.
Right.
And I do see this balancing, this new level of empowerment, where the two people working together are actually co-empowering one another, so that you have a synergistic system in place.
Right. Absolutely.
Something that's greater than the sum of the two parts.
Yes. And that's, you know, absolutely. And I see many relationships like that now, which is wonderful, and where partners have said, yes, my husband doesn't necessarily agree with, you know, go along with what I'm saying, or my wife has different, but it doesn't mean that they either of them has to give up.
Mm-hmm.
They enhance.
Mm-hmm.
They listen. They support them in their interests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think there's an underlying social drama going on in the male-female drama that we are experiencing on the social level, and how these new partnerships are finding ways of resolving these conflict issues that have been inbred and put into our archetypal mythologies.
Right.
Even the biblical myths of Adam and Eve, if Eve was the bad person,
exactly.
The so-called dark, sinister Lilith, and,
yes.
and Kali, and Pele, these were all the bad characters.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, and I think you bring this up in some of your literature, these are the very symbols now that are here to come back
yes.
and alleviate and bring back balance.
Yes.
How do you see those characters?
I mean, I love them all.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think so few people know about Lilith.
Mm.
You know, if you ask people who were the first men right. and women, I mean, it was completely taken out of the Bible.
It was.
It's like, who's Lilith?
Yes,
mean,
yes.
And Lilith was the first wife who refused to be underneath Adam.
Right.
Who, you know, he said, if you want to be with me, you're going to be under me. And
that's
it's
right.
like, and that, of course, was the missionary position.
Right.
It was the how this is we're going to have sex.
Right.
And she said, I'm not standing for this, and went. And, you know, of course, he got so lonely, he said, I'm lonely, give me a rib and
yeah.
I'll have a wife. And, of course, Eve could only ever be part of him.
Right.
And I think then the church went on to, of course, use the other mythology, which was only if you could produce a baby without sex, as Mary, Mother Mary did, could you be a real woman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so women were put in a very difficult position. You either had to be a rib
right.
or have this incarnate
yeah.
birth. It was... It's immaculate conception, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were basically, you were doomed which either way you went.
Right, right.
And what I see, I mean, so many of the traditions have these triple goddesses in.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there is some slight confusion because they all seem to be the same characters, but they have the same theme. There is the Virgin, the Mother, and the Crone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the Crone to me is the part of transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost have the Virgin that is the one that is growing, the Mother that is the holding,
mm-hmm.
and the Crone is the dying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And where you have societies who are so fearful of death,
mm-hmm.
because if I die, then what is there?
Yeah.
And that's certainly, the American culture has a great fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
The whole issue of the Crone is left out.
Right.
So we only concentrate on the two phases, and that's how women have been. You're either the virgin or you're the mother.
That's right.
Yeah, and if you're the bitch, well, we don't, really don't want to get to know you at all. Because this was Mary Magdalene again, and it, you know, so much of her story was, without her being there, Jesus would never have been able to do his work.
Right.
Just
right.
As if Judas hadn't been there, he wouldn't have done his work. But what I've come to understand, that she went through her own transformation and her own death through the humiliation that she went through, the stoning, the being put down as being a whore, even though she was a great priestess. She had to go through her dying, and her dying of the ego, to be able to hold that holographic space for Jesus to go through in those 3 days. And that, hence, when he came out and he went to her first, it was because she'd been standing there.
Right.
And you know, I see that for all of these great women, they all were the holders of space, not because men couldn't do it, but women had that potential to hold that space, and I think that is a role that women have.
Well, we're in the 3D reality, and although we're trying to perceive what it's like to have this 3D matrix and be able to put it on the shelf and say, okay, that's very nice, but there's this whole other that's going on beyond that. But within the 3D context, we have polarity that creates this 3D. And I think that's probably, on a metaphysical level, why there's the male and female.
Yes.
Not that one is good and one is bad, although they've been portrayed as such.
Yes.
One is dark and one is light. It's just a balancing point in order to give substance to a reality that will be able to express all that is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for whatever, as you say, whatever reason we have got a duality here, it's a wonderful opportunity. And it is that infinity sign, the place we're coming to. And I think that you've probably heard a lot where people say, oh, we just want to be one mind, we just need to be unity. I don't see us getting to unity without knowing ourselves in the duality and in the polarity.
Well, we have an opportunity. When we enter into the 3D matrix, this is where these kinds of things can be worked out, where the so-called free will enables us to you know, to realize more and better ways of how this can this balance point can be attained.
Absolutely.
When we're out of the 3D reality, when we transcend to a non-physical realm, I don't think that that's even an issue anymore. We don't even have the luxury, if you will, of having the sensual delights of the 3D reality. And I got to believe that there's a lot of non-physical entities who are very envious, looking down going, oh gee, I wish I could be in the game.
Well, don't you, I mean, I always heard that many, you know, we got the right straws. I often say to people, you pick the lucky straw.
Yeah.
And then half the planet want to get off it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
I can't wait to get home.
Here's the advertisement, you know, sign up here, you know, give us the diving and we'll make sure that you get to the right place.
I think in the hologram, the amusing thing is there is only this place.
That's right.
And of course that, you know, I had some teachings recently that was so profound, was saying, of course, everything is just a construct. And of course we know that. But I was asking, so is there heaven? Well, if that's what you want to believe. And is there nirvana, if that's what you want to believe. And I think I knew that, and it was the truth is, there is a belief that we're here on Earth, and when we get away from here, we're going to be home or whatever. There isn't anywhere else to go.
Right, right.
There is just consciousness.
Well, we used duality as a way of describing a three-dimensional matrix, and part of the duality that has been illustrated time and again to me is that of fear and love being the opposite sides. And I like when people say that there is only love, and then our misinterpretation of that becomes the fear. So, in a way, there's the whole of love. And then there is that kind of like shaded part of coming away from it. And that kind of gives form to the 3D matrix. So love and fear are part of a dualistic system that allows us to express all of these final, fine ways. How do you regard and what do you think the effect of love is on all of this hologram that we're describing?
Well, I like what you say about the fear and the love. And I think, coming back to the hologram, you know, I see it if we understand the principle of how it's created through this splitting of the beam. I mean, that splitting is the beam, is the primary way of creating duality. And one aspect of that beam continues on its merry way, and the other has the experience. And we're bringing those two together. So what I often say about fear is, if you have fear, and let's say we're not talking about realistic fears that say, if I jump from this hotel, I will probably do something to myself. Fears that probably I won't go there because that's the place you need to go to. Mm-hmm. And what I see with fear is it's got the creative source in it. Mm. And if we face our fears, it's often where we need to go back to this seeing people who are doing things that we wouldn't do. They're often the mirror that we need to face, mm-hmm. that we're not going. And so what I see is that fear allows us to go towards parts of ourselves that are still in the so-called shadows. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there is so much creativity and gold in those places. Yeah. And what we then do is that, to me, love is acceptance and integration. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, I've seen so much about love is just pretending there's nothing's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, harmony at any cost.
Yeah.
Love is meeting the most difficult parts of myself. Mm. Finding an acceptance for themselves, for them, and integrating them into my system.
Mm.
To me, that's alchemy.
Right.
The word alchemy being all chemistry.
Yes.
Knowing myself in all my facets,
mm-hmm.
and finding acceptance and integration.
It's a beautiful way of putting that. Let's rest on that a little bit and take a little bit of break. Come back, and I want to talk some more about the new work that you're doing, spiritual alchemy, as we're talking about the books. And some of the future schedule, and get some impressions on what you think is going to be coming up between now and the fateful 2012. So hold in there. We'll be right back after these brief messages from our sponsors. You've been listening to Dolphinville Radio, www.dolphinville.com. Thanks for listening.
Christine Page, and I warmly welcome you to Webs of Peace, a collection of imagery exercises and meditations designed to take you to a place of greater harmony and compassion, and offering your soul a deeper connection with other people, the nature kingdoms, the universe, and with a source of creative energy. Each exercise is complete on its own. And always starts with you finding a quiet place where you know you won't be disturbed and where you can relax your body, mind and soul. As you close your eyes, take several deep breaths, lingering over the out-breath so that any stress is released and you're able to achieve maximum benefit from this precious time you have set aside for yourself. Enjoy the journey.
All right, this is Douglas Dolphinus back with you. We're talking with Dr. Christine Page. We just listened to a section from a CD that she's produced. She has a number of CDs. How many do you have in all? And
we have about 6 CDs, uh-huh. and a DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the DVD's recently done. It's called From Curse to Blessing.
Mm.
It very much ties into what we've been talking about. Mm. Just Native American, wonderful Native American healer, Jean Redman, and teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Teach talks about what it is to be a woman from a Native American point of view. And why I chose her was that she didn't have a lot of Judeo-Christian beliefs about sexuality, about sex, about being a woman. And some lovely ideas that you see here. I'm wearing a dress that she says that all women should be back into dresses and skirts because the power comes up from the earth.
Ooh.
And what she reminded me was that judges and the Greeks and the Romans mm-hmm. and the Scots in their kilts all wore skirts. And you have to ask yourself, why do they all still wear skirts? And it was because they knew how to pull the energy from the earth.
Oh, how interesting.
And so more and more of my participants are going out and buying skirts and dresses. And it does make you remind yourself that it's not just pretty or attractive. It's actually where the power comes from for women. Mm-hmm. I've been working a lot with that because I always feel with the chakra system, for instance,
mm-hmm.
it seems ridiculous that we stopped here at the base chakra.
Right.
You know, most of us have legs.
Right.
And I realized that what's happened, again, I would say much more from a male model, we've stopped the energy that's coming up through the legs,
mm-hmm.
and I work a lot with the chakra under the feet that I call the earth child.
Mm. Why do you feel the human sexuality is also shifting with these new changes?
In terms of
Well, I mean, we have a partnership.
Yes.
We have, you know, commitment to, you know, monogamous relationships,
yes.
which are the traditional model.
Yes.
And now alternative models seem to be coming in as
yes.
people are exploring different ways. And it's come up as a topic. You know, how does that apply to you or the people that you're dealing with? Do you hear people talking, you know, the San Francisco Bay Area has, you know, so many different ways of expressing sexuality, and I don't know whether it's something that comes into your seminars.
It does, I think, as you say. I mean, I have many friends who are gay, many some friends who have been together 20 years. I mean, I have to say, if we were as loving as they are to each other, you know, who cares what sort of sexuality, in terms of, it's not about that. I've met so many people in so-called heterosexual relationships who are miserable,
mm-hmm.
who the sexual relationship is very abusive.
Mm-hmm.
To me, if you love, and sex is one of the highest levels in some ways of getting intimate, and when we use sexual energy in a most alchemical way,
yes.
it is the most healing form
mm-hmm.
Of inner. Why we have it is for
yeah.
our own healing.
Right.
But I think the sexual attitudes need to change
mm-hmm.
across
mm-hmm.
the board. It doesn't matter almost what your preferences are in terms of male or female.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more about, why do you have sex? What does it make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
What does it make you feel? How do you feel good about yourself? And
mm-hmm.
I work all the time with people who have been abused, and
mm-hmm.
I've long lost past stopped thinking, how could that happen? It's just because it's so widespread.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel that, how could we do this to each other?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in such a sacred act of sexuality, which was not there for procreation.
Mm-hmm.
We hear with the dolphins in the whales,
yes.
they can choose these things.
Right, right.
We know that most traditions lived far longer than we did, the Incas, the Mayans.
Mm-hmm.
And they had sex for the whole raising of consciousness,
yes.
which then brought healing. And if they then fancied having a child, they then changed their consciousness to have that child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's been turned completely upside
yeah,
down.
Yeah, well, it's become the control mechanism.
Yes.
For our culture, society,
yes.
certain religions,
yes.
religious doctrines and dogmas that have restricted us, and it's also separated us from, you know, the Eastern philosophies, which had a whole different regard for sexuality and tantric,
yes.
Energy flows.
Yes.
I was just curious as to, you know, if you see people who are going through these changes and they're adapting to new ways of looking at the world. Certainly they're going back to re-examine all of these dogmas and all of these belief systems that held them in place,
yes.
and demystifying
yes.
on that whole process. And I didn't know whether it was how it applied to some of your work. You've written also about 6 books, is that correct?
I have. My first one is Frontiers of Health, and that
mm-hmm.
very much is looking at why do we get sick, not in a judgment way,
mm-hmm.
but more like a Bible, where people will say, that's my illness,
mm-hmm.
and I can therefore learn from that illness what needs to change if I choose to make a change, or why perhaps certain parts of my body won't work as well for me as I would like. It ties in very much to the chakra system,
mm-hmm.
and I don't, as I say, see illness as a blame. I see it as an opportunity for change,
mm-hmm.
and it's one where, when I'm working with clients, I say, so what was going on in your life when you got sick?
Yeah.
It's a question we never ask.
Right.
We don't talk about what was going on. They say it's been going on 6 months. We go, fine.
Uh-huh.
We never say, so what was happening?
Right.
And then I've worked with thousands of cancer patients, and they always say, I know why I got cancer.
Oh.
And I think, this is information we're not using.
Wow.
And some of the times it's been to get out of a situation
mm-hmm.
that they couldn't have got out of. I met a young man, he said the only way I could get out of the business that was so corrupt was to get testicular cancer.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, you know, why didn't you tell them to stuff their job? And he said, I didn't have the balls to do it.
Mm-hmm. So he got cancer in the balls instead.
Yeah.
Well, that's very typical, I think, of how our culture plays against itself,
yes.
and illness are indicators.
And the body is so much. I always say the body loves you so much it will die for you.
Mm-hmm.
The body is your greatest friend, and never lets you down. It's us that let it down.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first book, and many of them led on from there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you've got books, you've got CDs, a DVD, you do lecture circuits, you go around the world, and plus you have a marriage, you have a great time. How do you organize all of these energy streams in your life?
Well, up to now, mainly on my own. Yeah. Now my wonderful husband's come in, that he's uh-huh. helping me out on this. I love what I do. I never do anything I don't enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
If I learn, I love learning. And because of my love of learning is that when I'm not learning, I'll change and do something different.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not growing and learning through my work, then I don't do that work anymore.
Mm.
And as you say, I used to bring people, and then when I felt that I couldn't get anything more out of it myself, I stopped doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sure that people don't get dependent on me just always being there, because I'll move on.
Mm.
I have to enjoy what I'm doing, and I have to enjoy it because it's stimulating me.
Mm.
That is the way I do it, and it works for me, and the universe meets me there.
Right.
I love traveling. I love taking people to new experiences, just as you say, to watch them get excited and face many of their fears. The group we just brought,
mm-hmm.
many of them had fears of, would I be able to get my snorkel gear on? Would I be in the water? I've never been in an ocean before. Will I be sick? And these are people who perhaps would never face those fears, but we all know they all have a metaphoric answer to them. The person who doesn't like to be out of their depth right. is a control freak in their
yes.
own right.
Yes,
the person who says, oh, well, what if I get sick? It isn't about vomiting on the boat. It's what if I show myself up?
Right.
I don't want anybody to think that I'm weak.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so whatever we experience on a boat for 2 days mm-hmm. is often showing us the bigger picture of our lives.
Yeah, and these seminars certainly do that in a focus. And the dolphins and whales seem to remind us not to take all that too seriously, to really enjoy life
yes.
To a maximum way. And they have this energy that really, I believe, ties us into what it feels like to be actually in the atmosphere of unconditional love.
Yes.
There's no holds, there's no conditions for anything except feeling yes. just where you are in the present moment.
Yes.
What a miracle it is.
It is. And we need to be unconditional with ourselves. As you say, we need to be without expectation.
Precisely. And that full potential is there.
Yes.
You know, you're in the zero point. As I like, you know, you've got the zero in the mathematical sense, as we know, is not only nothing, but everything at the same time.
Absolutely.
The real zero point.
Truly.
Well, now, we almost got together last summer, and I think it's kind of interesting because most of your work seems to be with the human dynamic, but you were asked to come to Glastonbury and talk at the Glastonbury Symposium about crop circles, of yes. all things. How did you get involved in that, and what was the subject of your conversation and contribution to the crop circle conference?
It was my third time at talking there, and I was very honored to be asked back. It always feels as if I'm in with this wonderful group of people who have studied crop formations for years, and I walk in as a relative amateur to the whole subject. But I was so inspired to go there because they have such a message for us all.
Mm.
And we've seen the crop formations that have now included the dolphins in them, and you may remember that wonderful dolphin picture where there were rings. And we saw them on each of the rings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And just prior to that, I had had a meditation where I'd been shown these rings, which I described as these grids around the earth,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that the dolphins were showing us how to jump from dimension to dimension,
uh-huh.
to move between those dimensions, that our job
mm-hmm.
was to be able to create what I see as wormholes
right.
between the dimensions.
Huh.
And what I was talking on this time was living in a holographic universe.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to create, to move from dimension to dimension
mm-hmm.
is more than just the head perhaps lying in visual imagery.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the ability to not be attached to these different levels, which may be the fear-based mentality or attached to the certain dogmas that are holding you back. It's being able to move between those dimensions is mm-hmm. not being off this planet. It means to be able to be a truly interdimensional human being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is what I was teaching this time. And I see these crop formations as such symbols to help us to free ourselves up. I think when we talk about the dolphins and the whales, they're sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But the symbols, as you know, go in through the left brain
mm-hmm.
and stimulate our deep knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And you only have to have one of those crop formations up and around, and there's something inside of you goes, ah, I
yeah.
know this.
Yeah.
And yet, what we know is that if you really, when people try and dissect them, they're missing the point.
Or ask, who made this?
Exactly.
Yeah, to me, my impression of it, my background is in the art world, and I was looking at it as an art form.
Yes.
Almost like graffiti.
Yes.
That has an anonymity to it. You don't know who did it, but it's making a statement. It's causing your attention to go
right.
and focus on something. Graffiti in a subway is causing you to focus on one thing, but graffiti in a crop field is taking it to another level.
Yes.
And the fact that they're bringing in a sacred geometry, they're bringing in fractal patterning, they're asking us to bump up our ways of thinking
yes.
about things. It's a marvelous opportunity for people, a new forum for people to start thinking in terms of different examples
exactly.
of the holographic universe.
And I think the problem we have is that we only see them in two dimension,
mm-hmm.
and even more so when a picture is taken of them.
Right.
And I know that they're three dimensional,
mm-hmm.
that what is above is below.
Yes, yes.
And I would love someone to create them from a three dimensional point, and I haven't seen anybody do that yet.
No, somebody suggested also that they may be a tonal signature,
right.
as opposed to just simply a visual signature.
Right.
And that might be a clue. So much is now being unfolded about the power of sonic
yes.
In healing, in understanding, in weaponry, in medicine, opening up different things, certainly chanting, and goes back in our history.
Right.
The sound of the voice, there was recently suggested in an article that the sound of the voice will cause a direct response in the DNA level.
Right.
And the programming of the DNA is responsive, like a language, to different vocal patterns.
Right.
I think we're just on the very, very edge, and we're starting to explode into a whole new realm of understanding of compassion, open-heartedness. Over these next 7 years, it's going to be a magnificent time till we come up to this sort of line in the sand or etching in stone, as the Mayans would have us show us in their calendar, that something, some big configuration is coming together of consciousness, of reality, of layering of being.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see these next 7 years unfolding in terms of what you're witnessing on a global basis?
I agree with you about sound and light, that I think we have a lot more to be seen. I think light has got went further ahead because of color.
Mm-hmm.
People got very excited by color therapy, but we really don't understand light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we understand it from that point of view. And when you mention the crop circles and the sounding, we have a friend who does sacred, who speaks in tongues, and
mm-hmm.
It happened to her rather than going looking for it. And she and I first met when I was showing crop circles on the screen at a conference, and she said, I know the sounds. And we put the screens up and we showed, I think, seven, and she sounded them.
Ooh.
And she said, I'm in them. And she uses her hands. She said, I absolutely know them.
Mm.
And I think that when I was invited to go and talk at the crop circle conference after that, I got everybody to tone
uh-huh.
the crop formations, just as you suggest.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just put one up and different up, and they do absolutely. And I think we know that there's a high probability they're created by sound.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, the cetaceans are the grand masters of the sonic atmosphere.
Right.
They use sonograms to look through and view the world as a hologram.
Right.
They can look through physical objects.
Yes.
And I think also it occurred to me, or maybe intuitively given to me by the dolphins, that they are showing us that why try to chase 186,000 miles per second
right.
as a concept and try to contain that, when you can slow it right on down,
yes.
the same waveform technologies are existent and an understanding is capable,
right.
and look at what we've done with it.
Right.
So this is, again, something that I think is right in front of us. But the human condition is right at the critical point. We've kind of backed ourselves against the wall, hands against the throat. Either we put up or die.
Exactly.
Kind of sensibility.
It feels, as you say, there's almost two levels working. One is a very conscious, I mean, this is very alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
One is a conscious choice to make changes.
Mm-hmm.
And one is one which can use much more subtle tools,
mm-hmm.
such as mantras and yantras. And we could be talking about just visual symbolism or thought, sonar
mm-hmm.
imagery, soma ways, and I think that both are available to us. I think that we've probably both seen that even if you put people in when we're listening to the sounds of the whales, mm-hmm. and you know you are being sounded, as you say, creating the hologram, they're holding that hologram for you,
yeah.
and you can make a choice which part you see. Mm-hmm. You put people in different colours and symbols, each of us will see so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Carolyn May saying is that when you're working primarily with the first and the second chakras, the base and the sacral, energy medicine won't work.
Mm.
Because your fixation on a three-dimensional survival mode is so strong that you can't go any stronger, further.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because what I was picking up yesterday is that literally the sound is being placed in the water,
mm-hmm.
and because of the energy being exerted against it, we're creating homeopathic forms of therapy.
Yes.
Which is one way in which that sound is entering our body. It literally is a homeopathic remedy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just can't imagine what it'd be like to create more well sound homeopathy for people to actually get in touch with this energy much quicker than to look and see if someone's actually done this.
Yeah.
But going back to this, there's a level which I've worked at, and I'm sure you've been around, where there are those who will be flying, they just have to take something and they move with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the challenge is those, all of us, there's nobody here without some fears, that are just needing a gentle help to let go in order to be more present to the sounds that are there.
Hmm.
And it isn't about necessarily seeking those who do not choose to change, because this is a planet of free will.
Right.
But to help those who are on the edge, living on that edge, who still just need a helping hand across.
Mm, mm.
And who will then fly, given the chance. And that's been a lot of my work, is to be in that on that window ledge, I often feel.
Mm-hmm.
Just helping, giving people a hand up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then let it, because they know where they're flying, they don't need me to tell them that.
No, they just need permission.
They need permission. And then they'll hear the sounds, and then they'll see the symbols.
Yeah.
But for all of us, we do have still that existence of the old energy,
mm-hmm.
and as you say, we're releasing not only for the next 7 generations or 11, but we're also releasing our ancestry.
Right, that's true.
We're healing them in both ways.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I definitely believe that the decisions we make now affect the hologram going in both directions.
Yes.
Time is a construct
yes.
that we have conveniently used to frame ourselves in the box,
yes.
and we're starting to lessen that, the grip of it is starting to be lessened on us, and we're starting to have confidence that we can live outside of those constructs,
yes.
Taking responsibility for our actions, being able to help others realize their own power without disempowering them, and it's kind of a fine line there. This grid work that you mentioned, I also see it as a lattice work of light that is like some huge filaments that are connecting and starting to illuminate this whole sphere, which I call Planet Gaia Consciousness.
Right.
And we're all part of that activity. And through joy, bliss, happiness, dolphins and whales, we get to join each other.
Exactly.
Get to play and,
exactly.
And share that with people. It's,
yes.
It's lots of fun.
Yes. It truly is.
And it's been lots of fun to be with you. ChristinePage.com.
Thank
you. We'll get people to your website. Find out where you're going to be. What's next up for you?
And we've had this wonderful trip of traveling with people on an alchemical journey.
Mm-hmm.
We're setting up some astrology seminars. These astrology seminars are going to be experiential, so you actually live your astrology.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that we choose when we're going to be born, where we're going to be born, etc. So you choose your astrology.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's, are you living it fully? Are you knowing who you are?
Mm-hmm.
So by acting it out and finding which parts of you perhaps need a little help,
mm-hmm.
this will bring that alive.
Mm-hmm.
Do the same in numerology.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
in the future, we plan to set up a center for this alchemical journey.
Mm-hmm.
But bringing, also taking people around the world to have experiences which enhances the grid. We're being advised to go to various places, like we're off to England and
mm-hmm.
Ireland to do some sacred site work at the in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But truly to help, the more we take these wonderful people, these wonderful conscious people who travel with me to various sites, the more we enhance the grid that we're working
mm-hmm.
with,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Mm-hmm.
I am talking at various conferences coming up. I'll be at the Science and Consciousness Conference in April in Albuquerque and various others.
Excellent.
Yes, so thank you.
Well, anybody who's in earshot of this and tunes into your website, I hope they'll take an opportunity to check out your books and your CDs. Those are all available on your website. We'll play a little bit more as we finish this program off. I want to just thank you so much, Christine, for holding the energy for the planet and just keeping the joy and aliveness that you do seem to maintain. It's important.
Thank you.
I really believe in the work, and thanks so much for joining us here.
Doug, this has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being you.
Yeah, well,
thank you.
That's my pleasure too. So, this is Douglas Dolphinus from Dolphinville Radio, saying thanks for joining us this time. I just want to remind you that this is here for your benefit. This is an informational flow that just helps you get along the trail. We're all in it together, folks. So, once again, just remember to be well and swim free. I'll see you next time.